Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Orlando Analyst and Investor Conference Call. My name is Dave, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to Wale Tinubu to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on this conference call regarding the recent allegations circulating in the media. I intend to start by reading out a brief statement, and then the floor will be open for questions. Orlando PLC has been mentioned a few times by a prosecutor in the ongoing confiscation proceedings against Mr. James Ibori, the ex-governor of Delta State in Nigeria, who was convicted sometime in 2012. At his trial, he pleaded guilty to the charges and was convicted on that basis. As a result of the process utilized to secure his conviction, none of the facts put forward in the prosecution's case was ever tested, simply because he did plead guilty. The prosecutor is now using the allegations that were never tested as the basis of establishing its burden of proof in the confiscation proceedings, which is aimed at making Mr. Ibori forfeit assets worth approximately £90 million to the Crown. In the course of conducting the confiscation proceedings, the prosecutor has deemed to be true all the allegations contained in the Crown's prosecution case of the initial trial. Some of these relate to statements made by Mr. Ibori to the effect that either he or his family owned 30% in Orlando, or in another statement, beneficial interest in Ocean and Oil is owned by him or his family. There is no suggestion from the prosecution of any wrongdoing or involvement by Orlando PLC. The following is the only evidence that has been presented as proof of Mr. Ibori's 30% ownership in Orlando PLC. One was Mr. Ibori's statement to the effect as proof of his legitimate earnings when he attempted to open a bank account in Europe. The second was a statement from a foreign bank which was made by him during their KYC process that the Ibori family had a 30% share in Orlando. And finally, the oral evidence by the prosecution witness, Detective Constable Clerk, that Ocean and Oil Limited and Orlando PLC are one and the same company, but under a different name. These contradictory statements were never tested, nor can they technically be tested in the confiscation proceedings if the defendant elects not to participate in the proceedings. There is also a dilemma for Orlando, as it's not a party to the confiscation proceedings and is not the accused, nor is it a defendant, nor is it a witness. As Orlando does not have a right to be heard, it cannot highlight the contradiction in the Crown's prosecution evidence.
The prosecution
admits in their own case that he only has about 400 shares in Orlando PLC. The share register of the company has not been adduced as evidence into the proceedings. Effectively, the prosecutor is making sensational statements about the shareholding, which he admits in her own evidence is actually untrue. Accordingly, we would like to make the following statements categorically: that Orlando is a publicly traded company listed on the exchanges and does and cannot control the trading in its securities on the floor of the respective exchanges. Ibori at no time in the history of Orlando's existence owned nor held a 30% stake in the company. Stake for a company with an issued share capital of 6.8 billion ordinary shares and a current market value in excess of $430 million. Oando cannot be held responsible if a politically exposed person or representative makes incorrect, misleading, and in fact false representations to a financial institution that does not independently verify the accuracy of such statements. And Oando also states that, however, Oando also states that sometimes in 2004, in the normal course of his business, its affiliate Ocean Oil Services sold approximately $2.7 million in three separate transactions in relation to foreign exchange over a period of about 7 months to companies which have not turned out to be indirectly controlled by Mr. James Burin. This amount was insignificant considering the company's turnover of approximately $800 million in 2004. And the company earns a substantial amount of its earnings directly in dollars, which it does have to convert into Naira to fund its day-to-day operating expenses. The contradictory evidence of the prosecution does not establish Ibori's claim, and in effect, the shareholder register of Oando actually destroys it. Our historical shareholding, highlighting all top 20 shareholders between 2004 and 2013, has actually been uploaded onto our website for access to our shareholders and the general public to see, to make an informed judgment that makes it very, very clear that he does not own and has never owned anything like the 30% which he has alleged to own in the company. Our actions in the case have been as follows. In 2012, Oando, of its own volition, approached the Metropolitan Police when it came to our attention that the company had been mentioned in the Crown prosecution case in relation to an alleged Ibori shareholding as well as the transfer of money. Oando made available to the Metropolitan Police evidence of Mr. Ibori's shareholding of the company at the time, which was approximately 400 shares, and evidence of the transfers from Ocean Oil Services to the Ibori-controlled companies in Switzerland, in the Swiss bank, was as a result of legitimate foreign exchange transactions and without any knowledge at the time that the company was related to Ibori. Furthermore, there was no evidence of any transfer from Oando PLC to the Ibori-controlled companies. Despite all of this, this evidence was ignored by the Crown, was not made available to the court, and the prosecution is now trying to use the payments made by Ocean and Other Services Limited as payments made by Oando PLC. To get around this hurdle of not having any links between Oando PLC and Ibori, the prosecution witness, Detective Constable Clerk, misled the court by saying Ocean and Oil Services and Oando PLC are the same company under a different name, clearly trying to establish a link that does not exist between Oando and Ibori. Oando, as a responsible corporate with obligations to its shareholders, will pursue all legal avenues available to right this wrong and seek appropriate compensation for any loss that occurs as a foreseeable consequence of this inappropriate action. The UK prosecutor is making damaging statements about a very substantial overseas company where there is no reasonable evidence to so conclude and that the company cannot defend itself in return. At this time, we have our counsel in court to intervene as a friend of the court if any issues relating to Oando are brought up in an insidious manner. We are also ensuring that no negative action is permitted against the company going forward. We will continue to update the shareholders with the developments accordingly. We've been very open so far with regards to this case and have released consistent press statements. We believe in transparency and will continue to show our commitment to this cause to our shareholders. I think the fundamental key takeaways are we have not been accused of any wrongdoing of any sort. Where Oando has merely been introduced in the evidence of the prosecution as proof that James Ibori does have hidden funds and has led evidence to the effect that it has a substantial 30% shareholding of Orlando as a result of the statements that have been made to the bank, and also as a result of the fact that foreign exchange, or in particular US dollars, were received, $32.7 million were received in companies controlled by him without adducing the evidence that has been provided by the company in prior engagement with the police of its own volition, that those payments were in exchange for Naira provided for Orlando in Nigeria as a result of the continuous process of sales which it carries out of its foreign exchange earnings in the local market. It is our expectation that we will follow appropriate legal remedies over the next couple of days, which would include ensuring that the evidence of the share register of the company is presented appropriately, as well as ensuring that the bank statement of the local credit is presented, to ensure that it's clear that any innuendo regarding those payments being anything other than foreign exchange transactions is satisfied. I will now leave the floor open and take questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and want to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You will be advised when to ask your question. The first question is from Gabenga Sholathan from Standard Bank in London. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having this call at this point in time. I just want to find out what the details of the $2.7 million transaction in transactions over the 7-month period that Ocean and Oil had with these companies that are now believed to be owned by Mr. Ivory. So just the nature of the transaction, that's my first question. Then my second question would concern Ocean and Oil, because it's also in the media that probably Notori or Mr. Jit is the major shareholder of Ocean and Oil, and Mr. Ivory is also linked to Ocean and Oil via Notori and all that. Just like to have an idea of the shareholding of Notori on Mr. Jit in Ocean and Oil. I think that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank you. First and foremost, the actual amount alleged by the prosecution is $1,199,513. But that amount is actually wrong. The actual amount transferred, sold to companies controlled by him was $2.7 million. And in the interest of full disclosure, as far back as last year, we corrected when we presented the evidence to the police. And I must state, we were not invited by the police to present any evidence. We never received any letter to them to verify what the transfers were for. We never received any letter asking for the share register of the company. Hearing via the grapevine that our names were, that the name of Orlando was mentioned in the proceeding, which, as you are aware, because of the proceeding, he pleaded guilty, those documents were never really made public to anybody. But at the end of the day, we got some information to that effect, and that's how we went in search of the police ourselves to actually provide the information. So the actual amount from our end, from our records, is $2.7 million. From the prosecution's record is $1,199,513, made up of two transfers of approximately $500,000 and each, and one for $200,000. Now, in terms of shareholding, Ocean and Oil is not a shareholder of Notori. And I will be able to provide before the end of... And Mr. Jito Okoloko owns a stake in Ocean and Oil, and I will be able to provide you with those details before the end of the call.
Okay, sorry, just a quick follow-up. I asked initially, as in the foreign exchange sale to those companies now believed to be controlled by Mr. Ibori, as in what's the nature of those transactions?
These were typical straightforward sales. The company sells a substantial amount of dollars on an annual basis, and as far back as 2004, we never operated a stringent KYC procedure in terms of the people we sold to, and these were typical requests that were passed on to our treasurer and acted upon, and once nairas were paid, dollars were in turn credited.
Okay. All right, thank you. That'll be all for now.
Okay, the next question is from the line of Femi Awoyemi from ProShare in Lagos. Please go ahead, Femi.
Okay. Two quick ones. I think it's a very good thing that you're holding this conference call, something I thought should have been held almost immediately. I have two major questions. But before then, let me just make one statement. I feel this is an unfortunate situation that we could all learn from. But from an investor's perspective, the following questions become pertinent. Why does it seem that there's a pervading cycle of negativity around Oando shares, and why is it that this has not been dealt with, which has consistently held their shares from moving up for quite some time? That's one. The second one is this. With respect to your presentation, you discussed about the court case and your efforts, which I commend you on, in going to the police and going to the Crown Court yourself. It is always normal that you could make the case that such a disclosure from one side concerning a public quoted company from a prosecutor, whether correct or not, would have a damaging impact on investors' psyche. Why was this not, if anything at all? Thank you very much.
Sorry, can you just repeat the last line of your second statement? You said, why was
my concern was that I felt it was a wrong process for the courts to allow a disclosure from one prosecutor without you having a chance to make your own case at the time in which it was made to be a public disclosure, because it had the tendency of creating the kind of hoopla that we saw. Anybody could go to a court and accuse another public quoted company of some wrongdoing, and the company would face the consequence of it. Why was it that the company did not stop such a disclosure from becoming a public record pending the time when the case was decided? And how was it that Reuters was the only one able to put out such an information without the benefit of the company's position? My understanding here is that when such cases were to be had, the company would then go ahead on a matter of public interest, say, look, these things could not be done this way because it would create a wrong impression, and the company would have suffered damages before the whole thing was made available.
Good. First of all, let me deal with your issue to do with negativity. I think it's a very general question when you say negativity around the shares. So I would honestly like it to be narrowed a little bit. If it's in terms of the value of the shares, I would simply state categorically that I think the expectation of delivery in the last few years has not met market expectations. And the reality is that the company has sought to resolve that by first things first was we didn't pay a dividend in 1 year. This would have been the first year in the last 10 years we didn't pay. The company reversed that by recommencing the repayment of dividends as we did for the business year 2012. Thereafter, I think the issue that really needs to be understood is that the company has invested a substantial amount of money in ensuring its diversification out of the downstream. Now, we cannot be in a situation where we continue to expend substantial amounts of money, bloating the working capital requirements, increasing the debt load of the company, whilst earning a declining return in the downstream, as well as with the continuous large amounts of money owed by the government subsidy claims. Currently, we're close to 40 billion, and we've only received two payments this year, and we were very glad with the announcement after numerous entities with the Minister of Finance to ensure that we are now being paid. Effectively, we've actually stopped importing petroleum into the country. We are confident that with the steps that we've been taking in the gas division, in the overall midstream division, with the rigs, we have the fourth rig arrives in the next couple of days, and our upstream operation, particularly with the pending acquisition of ConocoPhillips, the company will end up having a steady, increasing, high margin return from its business without pressure on its balance sheet going forward. Now, I believe that this would resolve this, and I suppose this could be the subject of a future conference call. Now, when you say negativity, I think that there are certain shareholders who have realized that, you know, it is a long-term investment and are treating it as one accordingly. There are certain shareholders who have traded in and out of the stock and have deemed it as speculative. And I think that, indeed, the reality is we're in this conference call because you're invested, and you're invested for a reason that you do believe in the company. And I think that you do need to allow the company to deliver on the promises it's made to its shareholders, and we are certainly on course to doing that. Now, regarding the profits, we know and understand that it's extremely unfair what has occurred. But what has occurred and the company has acted in a professional manner in handling the circumstance. We volunteered the information to the police. The police and the prosecutor have failed to utilize that information. Effectively, they are guilty of suppressing information, because when they opened the case, they stated the fact that, A, he says he owns 30% of the company, of Wando PLC, okay? They stated the second case, he has received money from Ocean and Oil. So in effect, by virtue of the fact that he said, we have stated our case, okay, without stating that they have evidence to show that he doesn't own 30% of Orlando PLC, because we provided it to them, and B, without stating that the reason for the receipt of the foreign exchange was in exchange for typical, normal, everyday foreign exchange transactions that occur. So we are in a situation where half the evidence has been provided, and all the prosecution needs to do is provide half the evidence, and the burden then shifts to the defense to disprove it. The prosecution doesn't have to prove anything in a forfeiture proceeding. They only need to allege that something exists, and it's up to the prosecution, the defense, to rebut that proposition. Now, what we are doing is to ensure that the evidence which has not been provided to the court be provided appropriately before the end of this process. And this process, we expect the process to end, the actual case, presentation of evidence, end by latest Wednesday of next week. So it's not a long, drawn-out process. It's actually a very short trial, and it's effectively one that will end up in an order being made against James Ibori, and thereafter, a receiver is now appointed to recover these things, these hidden assets that may have been identified. The receiver still has to go out and look for them if there has been enough grounds established by the prosecution that they exist. Now, in our case, it's a situation where those grounds can actually be dealt with in this process without having to wait till the receiver is appointed, in the sense that he doesn't own 30% of the company, and B, the reason for the receipt of the funds were currency exchange transactions, which the Naira lodgements in Nigeria, the okay, which were directly related to those payments, exists in the bank facility and the bank's bank statements of the company. And I must say, the bank statements are of Ocean and not of Oando PLC, and the prosecution in their statement to court claims Ocean and Oil and Oando PLC are the same company.
Which is not true.
Correct.
Okay, if I might just end, personally, as a CEO of Porsche, we retain our confidence in Oando PLC's corporate governance principles. We understand that the fundamentals of the company hasn't changed pre and post these disclosures. It will only help going forward that Oando understands how to perhaps move much more rapidly to calm our concerns when such information is disclosed. That would just be my closing comment.
Thank you. I must say that it is an experience, because one of the key things probably we ought to have done is at the point in time when we did visit the police and hand this information over, maybe we ought to have done a press release then and there. Because we were assured by the police that thank you very much for the evidence, thank you for your cooperation, and indeed commended by them for the cooperation. But bear in mind that the same police never wrote us one letter, never came to visit, never called, made one phone call to the company in any way, shape, or form. So clearly, we're not even interested in pursuing or investigating the matter. It was clearly a situation where a prosecutor seeks to make sensation out of Oando because it's a prominent company. And indeed, we do have grounds for damages after this trial, and a brief is already being prepared for us to file the case after.
Thank you very much, sir.
The next question is from the line of Stephen Conville from All Group Toronto. Please go ahead, Stephen.
Hello, and thank you very much for taking my call. I am quite baffled by this scenario, and I just want to ensure that I have my facts straight. We have essentially someone who's been in prison for several years. We have an individual who has pled guilty to several charges, and from what I understand, the basis of the evidence that's kind of tainting the good reputation of Oando is the fact that he had made statements to a third party in non-relevant transactions, but simply in a situation where he wants to impress potential future business partners, from what I gather. So, Mr. Bhuri, while opening accounts, mentions that he owns shares in Oando. The individual at that time never took any steps, from what I can gather, to verify at that time if those statements were even verified. And they were made in a different country. And what I'm trying to figure out here is if every publicly traded company and if every public official and if every celebrity, if every politician had to base their operations on the statements that were unsubstantiated by one individual, especially if that individual is incarcerated, the world would be sheer chaos. And what I would like to know is what we, as investors who have full confidence in the capabilities of Oando and its management, what we can do legally, what are our options, what avenues can we pursue against the prosecutor or the police department, the Crown, in England, so that we may recoup some of our losses. It it almost, and part B to this question for me is, it almost seems as if there are political motivations behind this, and I don't know if you're privy to comment in that way, but you know, is it possible that this could be a politically motivated scenario? It just seems almost unreal that statements without verification can have such dramatic ripple effects. And maybe you can comment on my concerns over here in North America and what our options are, because I'm truly, truly saddened by this on so many levels.
Thank you very much for your comments. And these are the areas, effectively, which we have explored with our solicitor. And I'm actually going to have the solicitor dial in to provide some color on this during the course of this conversation. The fact remains that he is clearly a boastful personality who was seeking to provide legitimacy to the earnings he was crediting into the Swiss bank account. And what is clear from the total statements that have been provided is that he claimed to be a substantial shareholder, not only of Oando, a bank, and had a substantial wealth in Nigeria, not just personal wealth, but family wealth. In fact, indeed, what the court or the prosecutor had said was that his wealth was likened to something like the Kennedy clan that makes business and mixed business and politics. Now we must remember that this is a forfeiture proceeding. Okay, sorry, this is a confiscation proceeding and not a forfeiture proceeding, in the sense that what the court is trying to establish here is that he has more wealth than he has declared, and that wealth was funded by embezzlement from government coffers in Nigeria. So the government, what has been declared by him is £50 million, and the UK government believes that it's up to £90 million. They're looking for a delta of 40. So they're scanning and they're doing a search, or casting their net wide, looking for this hidden wealth. Now, this hidden wealth, as far as they're concerned, there are two avenues, because A, he has made statements, and since those statements were statements he made prior, albeit that these statements are statements made, as you rightly said, to three different institutions in three different countries at three different times, and really, indeed, it's just, you know, effectively boastful hearsay. That is the basis under which the prosecution is coming. So, in reality, we believe the prosecution is legally right to move what it wants to move, but it cannot suppress evidence which it knows to exist. Neither can it make statements which are easily verifiable, and that's the challenge. So, we are in the process of seeking legal advice about mounting a cause for damages right after this is over, because the prosecution need not have caused the company the damage it has caused from a reputation. Even if the share price recovers, like it's doing now, to the level it was prior to this announcement, it still remains to be seen that, you know, there's been lots of management time, lots of management focus. People have been worried about their investment, and there is something to be paid, and somebody needs to pay for it. And so, indeed, there will be this matter will be brought forward right after, and our lawyers are already preparing an appropriate claim on behalf of the company.
Well, thank you very much for that. And the one sentiment that I would like to echo from one of the previous callers is that, you know, this will not be the last time. You are a significant publicly traded company, and there will be all sorts of different things that come your way, both positive and negative. And I'm hoping that you guys will be forever vigilant, and you will have your lawyers ready so that the next time someone or somebody makes such spurious statements that denigrate the good corporate name, that you are immediately upon them and not so professional and polite as you have been in the course of these proceedings. I'm not advocating you do anything untoward, but I do think that in these situations, many times it is shown that the nice guys finish last, and it appears to me that you gave the benefit of the doubt to people who did not deserve that. And I hope and I wish you well, and I'm glad that the share price is recovering, but I do echo your sentiments. Someone should be held accountable, because this is completely unprofessional, inappropriate, and not right. Thank you.
Wally, just to confirm, Charles Morrison's on the line.
Charles, our solicitor, is on the line, so I think it'd probably be a good idea if you could touch on the civil claim and the civil remedies available regarding what has gone on.
The position is, so far as we are concerned, and so far as we are advised by eminent Queen's Counsel in the field, and we are advised by one specialist criminal and fraud, and the other a specialist judicial review who also happens to sit as a criminal judge and is also a criminal prosecutor. Our specialist criminal Queen's Counsel has been sitting as a criminal judge in England for 28 years, so they know what they are talking about. We are advised that the prosecution has no business advancing the theories that they have in relation to the involvement of the land in the business of Mr. Ebori and his companies. We say that an imbalanced view has been of the world has been put forward by the prosecution in these proceedings, and we have told the judge that that is our view. We have also written a letter before action to the Director of Public Prosecutions in London, explaining why we feel that the prosecution has behaved improperly in this matter, and explaining that we are considering judicial review proceedings. We are advised by Queen's Counsel that an action for damages lies at the hands of Oando, and we are currently under instruction to look at that. We are confining our resources at present, or should I say, directing our urgent attention to the proceedings which are ongoing in the Southwark County Court, because we would like to influence those proceedings if we can, so as to ensure that a balanced view of the evidence is put before the judge. That hasn't happened at the moment, and we are in the midst of preparing an application to the court, which, if so advised by Queen's Counsel, we will launch in the coming days. it's certainly our view that the prosecution have no business making the statements they have on the flimsiest of grounds. I'm not even going to say evidence, because I'm going to use the word that Mr. Andrew Bailey, GC, habitually uses to describe the case, and that is a mere theory. And it's a theory that is not balanced by having applied to it the clear evidence that the prosecution has from Orlando, from senior Orlando executives, of precisely what has happened with the money that they say was paid by Orlando to an Ebori-controlled Swiss company, for example. They have not one shred of evidence to suggest that there is any involvement of today, any involvement today on the part of Orlando or any of its affiliated companies with Mr. Ebori. They rely only upon what they describe as an irresistible inference, and we say it's very far from that. We also think that the criminal prosecutor fails to understand the distinction between a shareholding on one level and the assets and property and dealings of a company, which is of course separate, on the other. As we have said, Jack the Ripper could buy shares in British Telecom, but no one would hold British Telecom to account if that were to happen. British Telecom can't stop that. And Orlando is in the same position today. It knows not who is holding shares on behalf of someone else. All it does know is that the shares held by Mr. Ebori, which are largely accrued as bonus shares, are in the number of 400. The prosecution case itself is that there are 355. That, in our group, does not amount to a substantial holding when the total issued share capital is some 6.8 billion. So we are immensely troubled by the prosecution case, and we are working to bring our concerns to the attention of the High Court in London as soon as we possibly can.
Okay, the next question is from the line of Ludi Buizi Obike from Stanvic IBTC Lagos. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening, and thank you for the presentation. My question kind of centers around the conflicting presentations we've heard recently as regards Wando and Wando, ConocoPhillips, and Phillips Brass. I'll appreciate some clarity as that Wando's acquisition of Phillips Brass, and if that acquisition is not going to hold on, as it is stated by some in the media, what will be the impact in terms of the price Wando will pay for the ConocoPhillips asset and the cash flow projections that we have
Shall I move to the next question?
Oh, no, sorry. I'm sorry. We had a problem with the line. I'll go back.
Thank you.
I'll start again. Orlando PLC owns 94% of Orlando Energy Resources, which is a Toronto-listed company. The contract to purchase ConocoPhillips assets was originally done by Orlando Energy Resources, but the obligations are guaranteed by Orlando PLC under the sale and purchase agreement. Now, under the sale and purchase agreement, there was the Phillips Oil Limited, which is the bulk of the onshore assets there was Conoco Energy Company, which was the bulk of the offshore assets, and there are two offshore blocks. And then there was a fourth company called Phillips Brass Limited, which owned the 17% stake in Brass LNG. Now, what has occurred as part of the process of the ongoing negotiations, Phillips Brass acquisition has been terminated as between OER and ConocoPhillips, and that obligation has been assumed by Rwanda PLC because it fits snugly, because Phillips Brass is a midstream project, which is primarily a gas, liquefied natural gas project, and it fits in Rwanda PLC's midstream division, whereas Rwanda PLC's upstream investments are vested in Rwanda Energy Resources, which is listed on the Toronto Exchange. So effectively, the obligations still continue for the acquisition of all three assets, the difference being that Rwanda Energy Resources in the Toronto listed company will only be purchasing the upstream assets, which are Phillips Oil, which is the onshore asset that holds 500 million barrels of reserves, as well as Conoco Energy and the third company, which owns the two offshore blocks. So effectively, we are vesting the oil-producing assets and the oil-rich assets in OER, and the midstream asset is coming into Rwanda. I think that there are appropriate provisions in the agreement to ensure that should Rwanda not be satisfied with the terms and conditions over the ensuing months, it will not be liable in the long term for the acquisition costs. So at least it is a balanced a transaction. Thank you.
Thank you. If you don't mind, I'll kindly provide updates on the acquisition of the whole ConocoPhillips assets. Where are you right now? I read some publication about on the extension of the deadline for the completion of the acquisition to November. So what level, what percentage have you completed right now? And how confident are you that you meet this new November deadline? Timeline.
We continue to be quietly confident about the transaction. We do have some confidentiality issues that do not allow us to disclose as much as we would like to disclose to at this point in time. But if you do remember, our disclosures have been focused on the fact that we expected the purchase price to be around the $1.5 billion mark of the upstream assets, that is Phillips Oil and Conoco Energy and Phillips Deepwater, which are the two deepwater blocks, as well as the onshore assets, which is Phillips Oil, which is the bulk of the reserves, 700 barrels of 2P2C reserves and 50,000 barrels a day of the production. The whole idea was those assets will be financed with approximately 50% debt and 50% equity. Now, we had approximately $435 million has been paid as a deposit, leaving $315 million to be settled. And then we had a debt raising of $750 million to do, which has effectively been completed in the markets already. So we have a closure date of November 30. And that transaction and the acquisition will be closed upon, of course, us securing the consent of the minister. But as regards whether or not the transaction will close, we see absolutely no reason why it would not close. We are on course to doing it. And if you remember, every one of the fundraising steps we announced to the market we would carry out as far back as of January last year when we commenced this transaction, we've simply ticked all the boxes. And it's simply taking time, but the company is protected in that we are paying interest on the purchase price at approximately LIBOR, which has been amended to read LIBOR plus 3.2% on the purchase price from December when we signed the sale and purchase agreement to present date. But all the liftings of crude oil done by the company are for the account of us, of Oando, the buyer. And those crude oil liftings are in excess of the interest cost on the purchase cost. So effectively, the time it has taken us to close is not in any way a detriment to the transaction. Indeed, it is better for us, for the company, to optimize the financing and close with the best terms and conditions than rush into a closure with temporary financial structures only to go into a very expensive refinancing market. So we are on course and things are going according to plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Yinka Ibukund from Bloomberg News Lagos. Please go ahead, Yinka.
Hello, this is Yinka Ibukund from Bloomberg in Lagos. Thank you, sir, for the update on the acquisition on ConocoPhillips. My question regarding to that is whether or not the news from the UK prosecution has had any impact on that deal in any way. My second question is to know if there's any good news in the pipeline that could possibly override the damaging effect of this latest news from the UK prosecution again. And my third question is a quick one. You've spoken about considering judicial proceedings. Your lawyer mentioned on the line, although it wasn't very clear, I just wanted to clarify against whom this proceedings would be. Would it be against the prosecution, against the Crown? Just technically, who would that be against?
Good. Thank you very much. Regarding your first question, I must make it clear again that these proceedings, Rwanda is not accused of doing anything wrong, neither is it a party, neither is it a defendant in this proceedings. Rwanda is a party that is only incidental to the proceedings in establishing the fact that the defendant may have more money than he has declared to the government. As regards whether or not it has an impact on the deal, it doesn't have any contractual impact to the ConocoPhillips sale and purchase agreement we've signed, neither does it have any impact regarding the financing of the company, in as much as the fact that all investors, shareholders, financiers want clarity about the issues. And I think that is really what we seek to do in more ways than one, to ensure that the true facts are stripped of any innuendo of wrongdoing and they are laid out for what they are. A simple situation where somebody has claimed to own what he doesn't own because you, the shareholders, own it. And that is really where we are. And we don't see this as having any long-term effect. It maybe has had a few days of distraction, but we're back to business as usual in terms of continuing with the process of completing the transaction. So we're 101% confident that we will go through with that transaction, and we do not have any, we do not see this as being anything other than a slight distraction. Now, in terms of whether or not we have any good news as Orlando PLC in the face of damaging news, we do have a lot of good news, which as a company we will reveal over the next couple of months. We have a fourth rig, a $100 million investment arriving in the country over the next month. We already have secured a contract in excess of $120,000 a day with one of the majors for that rig to drill. We have a compressed natural gas facility which has been under construction for the last 24 months, which will be launched, which is undergoing test phasing, which we will do a formal launch on the next couple of weeks. We have a $140 million investment in a midstream jetty, which would reduce the demurrage exposure in the downstream in Lagos Harbor by over 50%, you know, saving the country as a whole in excess of $100 million a year in lightering costs, and certainly providing us a good return, which would be completed by November. There are quite a number of positive projects which add directly to the bottom line of the company that will come on stream in this quarter, amongst others. We also have a power plant as well too, which has been developed, which has launched. It has commenced fracking power, and we'll do a formal launch for that as well too in the next couple of days. Now, your next question would be regarding our options in terms of seeking redress for the action. I think that we do have a solicitor on the line, and I think that it's probably best if he outlined very quickly the options which we have. But I mean, it's important to note that I think that those things are not necessarily what we do want to raise at this point in time, because it could be prejudicial to the company as a plaintiff in terms of being able to prosecute its action if it discloses its strategy ahead of time. So Charles, I'll pass it on to you.
Thank you, Wally. I think those are wise words, if I may say so. We have to be cautious here. We are talking about court proceedings, so we have to be careful. I don't think that it's any secret that the party who has been visiting the damage upon our company is the Director of Public Prosecutions, the Crown Prosecution Service in England, and that's the body that we are examining our position in respect of at the moment. We wish that they would take a more balanced and sensible approach to their prosecution of Mr. Ibori. They are not prosecuting us, they are not investigating us, they never have investigated Orlando. It's sad that they have been as reckless, certainly careless, with the way they are conducting that case, giving rise to the damage that we complain about in respect of our company. I don't think that I want to say anything more than that.
Good, thank you.
The next question is from the line of Kabenga Shurathan from Standard Bank London. Please go ahead.
All right, thank you for taking my question once again. I just have a follow-up question, because most of the time when you speak with investors both locally and internationally, the what comes to mind is the ownership structure of Ocean and Oil. So basically, like, I think it's going to be good, or it's going to be fair if Orlando is able to at least, you know, along with the shareholding structure of Orlando PLC that's going to be on the website, Actually, the major shareholders have voted on all. The first question is, these major shareholders, do they have their interest directly or indirectly in other companies? So this might also be a sort of a risk, or what people would also want to consider, that they need some clarity on this. So that's what I want to add to this call.
Good. I mean, it's a good suggestion. Ocean Oil is a private company, and I think we will take it up to them.
Hello?
Yes, we have this.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Sorry, can we have the next speaker, please?
Okay, the next question is from the line of David Stedman from CSL London. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you for this conference call, this opportunity. Can I just come back to the ConocoPhillips Nigeria transaction? And just, you know, for clarification's sake, the price adjustment between Oando Energy Resources and Oando PLC of 198 million. Just clarify and confirm that is just for Phillips Brass LNG. And if that is the case, can you give a rough idea of how you got to that number? Intuitively, it seems quite a big number for this asset.
That number is entirely driven by book value. It is simply the cost of which Phillips Oil, Phillips Brass, ConocoPhillips has actually invested in the development of Brass LNG, which is effectively 17% of the total cost of the Brass LNG development till date. That really is the structure of the deal. Now, I must assure you that it doesn't in any way affect the fortunes of Oando PLC regarding the way and manner the transaction has been structured. I know you may be concerned that it is a large number, but it's a well structured transaction that will not have an effect on Oando PLC.
Very good, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you have a question or comment, please press star 1 on your keypad. At the moment, we have no further questions coming through.
Well, I could just conclude by thanking everybody for dialing in. We have learned quite a bit from you today, and one of the most fundamental takeaways is really to get actively involved in communicating directly with shareholders as soon as incidents of this nature occur. Hopefully, it will not only be negative times, it will also be positive times as well. And then we will seek to consistently update you as we make progress in terms of protecting the company's interests and ensuring we put this unfortunate instance behind us, and also learning from this incident to ensure that going forward we are able to protect the company in advance of this kind of situations occurring. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now replace your handset.